you work with clients now that are dealing with the government on a regular basis. I mentioned the potential shutdown. We're here because of continuing resolutions. It seems like we're on our 88th continuing resolution. But a serious count that I heard this morning was since calendar year 2011 began, this is the seventh one. In the years that you've been working in the government market, what have you seen as an effect of continuing resolutions, both on the agency side and on the industry side?
You mean effective in the sense that this wasn't...
What's it doing to the way that we do business?
Oh, okay.
And what does it do to the way that we ordinarily do business? Yeah.
I'll tell you, in speaking to a lot of government agencies and a lot of government personnel, this costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, virtually millions of dollars each time there is a delay because people start preparing for a shutdown that perhaps is, you know, very, very infrequent, doesn't take place. But it's still, people have to be formulated, memos have to be written, people have to be selected. Are they critical? Are they non-critical? And government really comes to a stop. And I suspect right now it's in that mode right now, and that this really is expensive for the taxpayer.
We're seeing some of the memos that agency heads are sending out to their people, and thinking about what some of those memos say, and it's pretty much along the lines of what you're talking about. We'll let you know if you're accepted or non-accepted, informally by tomorrow, formally by Monday. And so it seems, at least for the next couple of days, both the agencies and the vendors that are serving them are pretty much just in standby mode.
Absolutely in standby mode. I have some friends. My son works as a contractor at one of the security agencies, and they're going through the same thing. They talk about what is our next steps? What do we do? And things get delayed. And everybody says, well, we can't do a project that's a week away because maybe we're going to be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, there's delays. Those are costly delays. They're still paying contractors while they're doing this. And the government is really – and unfortunately, I don't believe this is the last one this year. I mean, we're going to have several more probably.
One of the things that is a possibility this afternoon, and as I mentioned, we'll keep updating as we hear, but one of the things that I've heard kicked around in the last day or so is, well, we'll just do another one for a week, and then we'll come back next week instead of going on vacation and work it out then. And it's just seems like it's delaying the inevitable. At some point, there's going to be a headbutting that's going to be hard to work through.
Just think about morale if you were worked for a company that said, well, we'll pay you for the coming week, but we don't know about the week after that. But you come in this week and you be real productive,
mm-hmm.
because then we'll figure out if we're going to pay you for the following week. I don't think that's very motivating.
What overall, if I'm working at a company that's trying to figure all of this out, especially a small company where maybe I'm only have a staff of 10, 15, 20, 50 people, this has got to be just really hard to work through.
It is very hard for them. I know a number of companies, small companies, maybe not that small, but, you know, the 25-person company where 23 of them are billable people.
Yeah.
And they wonder, is there going to be a paycheck? These are people who don't have huge lines of credit. They're expecting payment. They're expecting continuity, and they don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, Congress really doesn't care, but it's, you know, the backbone of this country is still small businesses, and I think it affects them the most.
Is there a potential backlash for that long term for the contracting community and for the agencies where for a long time it's been, man, if you can get it on a schedule or if you can get in the government market, you're set. Where if this continues to perpetuate itself, that idea might go away and there might be companies that say, you know what, it might not be worth it, especially the small companies that wind up being subs on a lot of bigger deals for some of the bigger companies.
I've told you in the past, Francis, I've been here a long time and I've seen a lot of cycles, and I believe we're entering another cycle where companies are going to start saying, I don't want to do business with the federal government. It mm-hmm. is too difficult. All these stoppages are affecting me. I already hear the grumblings. I hear it from product companies. I hear it from service companies that, hey, this is not worth the effort. I believe that we've been in, let's face it, since 9/11. We've been in 10 years of over-prosperity, I'll
mm-hmm.
call it. I mean, it's just been money spent, money thrown at every problem, and lots of contractors came into this marketplace. They weren't there in the 90s. They weren't even there in the 80s. But what's going to happen is now they're getting burned. All they hear about is budget, budget, budget. and they're going to go away. Some people say that's good because then the cream will rise to the top. But I say in the end it'll affect the federal government because competition will go away. Mm-hmm. They'll have less competition for contracts.
We see that at all levels, too. I mean, we had before Secretary Lynn left the Defense Department, he was on the show talking about that very issue, the idea that the last time the cycle looked like this, the defense industry went from maybe 10 to 15 big players down to a handful. And if that same thing plays itself out, we would see a tremendous consolidation. That's at the very top, the very biggest players, and then seeing the same thing in the middle and bottom. And it also seems to have the effect of companies getting thrown into competition with companies that are much larger than they are, that maybe wouldn't have gone after a particular piece of business 5 years ago or 2 years ago, that now they will.
I deal with a lot of small businesses, classified as small businesses, and they're very concerned because the small business classification takes companies that are $10 million and says, and $15 million, depending on the number of employees, mm-hmm. says they're a large business and they have to compete with the billion and multiple billion-dollar corporations, and it's just not fair. They can't compete in that realm. Mm-hmm. I mean, the size standard has been put in front of Congress and in front of GSA and the agencies a number of times, but it has not changed in mm-hmm. a while.
Overall, what is your assessment of the level of competition in the government market? Is it healthy? Is it good? Or is it suffering a little bit for whatever reason?
Yeah. I right now, if you took this moment in time, I think it's very good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see a lot of you just look at the multiple awards and they'll award 52 contracts, 35 contracts, because there is a lot of competition. But again, it's because of this 10-year trend. Look 2 years from now, and I think it'll change dramatically.
You mentioned 9/11 and the way that kind of sparked this over-prosperity, as you call it, and I think that's an eloquent term. Is it fair to blame all of where we're going on just the fiscal situation of the country, or would this be happening anyway as we're, you know, for example, Secretary Panetta's in Iraq marking the official end of our military activity there, and there'll be a transition there. We'll theoretically be spending a lot less money on operations there. So is some of this what would be happening anyway?
Perhaps as the wars wind down, we've been in a war economy since 2001, and yet we keep on continuing to do what we do. I have a whole theory about that, but I think that, yes, we are starting to trend down, move from a war economy, but in the cycles in the 40 years I've been in this marketplace, I see those trends come and go, and you know, I've been here since the 1970. Mm-hmm. So saw us go through the Vietnam War on that end, and then it trended down and trend back up. But for the IT community, it is always a real issue, and this budget is really affecting them all, as I said. And I believe there's going to be a number of companies just pull out.
Mm-hmm. Jimbo Prey, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Here's Dr. Daniel Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary of the DHS Science and Technology Directorate, commenting during a recent panel discussion titled, Can Innovation Survive Budget Cuts?, sponsored by Noblis.
We're seeing approximately a 50% reduction in our buying power. That's sort of the bottom line from fiscal year 2010 to the continuing resolution in 2012. And I wouldn't want to tell you that all the missions that we think are important are going to get done. And in fact, at these levels, we believe we are just at the edge of maintaining viability of the DHS S&T mission.
To listen to the program in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Today's budget-constrained environment requires government agencies to do more, faster, with fewer resources. Noblis is a science, technology, and strategy organization that excels at turning ideas into innovation. Through advanced technology, creativity, and resourcefulness, Noblis is helping agencies meet their mission objectives and accelerate the time it takes to go from ideas to implementation. Learn more at noblis.com.
I just got 4G LTE from AT&T here in Washington, D.C. And let me tell you, it's crazy fast. Up to 10 times faster than 3G. My roommates can't keep up.
Ooh, Jenny, did you hear?
That Barbara has an extra ticket to the concert? Lisa, that's so 42 seconds ago. I already downloaded it from the link she sent me.
Oh, great.
Lisa will forget about that ticket soon. See, about 52 seconds ago, her boyfriend changed his relationship status to single. She doesn't know that yet, but she will in 3, 2, 1...
AT&T, rethink possible. Introducing AT&T 4G LTE in Washington, D.C. with speeds up to 10 times faster than 3G.
The new HTC Vivid from AT&T. Stay a step ahead with AT&T 4G LTE where available. Featuring speeds up to 10 times faster than 3G. Only $199.99. Visit att.com or store for details.
Limited 4G LTE availability in select markets. 4G LTE device and data plan required. Claim compares 4G LTE download speeds to industry average. 3G download speeds new to your wireless service agreement with minimum $15 monthly data plan required. Other charges and restrictions apply.
Attention federal and military agencies. If you've got communications research or other equipment to launch into geosynchronous orbit, Intelsat General offers this wake-up call. With deep spending cuts in place and more on the horizon, it's never been more important to follow the national space policy and work with an experienced commercial-hosted payload partner who can deliver fast, reliable, and cost-effective access to space. Intelsat General is that partner. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Ravens fans, 1500 AM Federal News Radio is your DC home for Ravens football. Listen to every game as the Ravens dominate the AFC North and march toward the Super Bowl.
He's got a small hole inside the five, still in his feet, touchdown! Fires over the middle, it's intercepted! Ray Lewis with the pick! Flacco throws, end zone, touchdown Ravens! The Ravens offense delivers the miracle!
Catch all the action as the Ravens take on the San Diego Chargers Sunday, December 18th. Pre-game starts at 7:50 p.m. on 1500 AM.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's what's coming up on Friday morning's Federal Drive. The deadline is here. Will a continuing resolution pass? We'll find out if lawmakers can buy themselves a little time to negotiate an omnibus spending bill. And we'll learn how a new tool vending room at the Norfolk Naval Shipyard helps streamline the business of government for shipyard workers. That and more Friday morning at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, go to federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jim Beaupre, and on Industry Chatter today. And the challenges that the industry is facing, that government vendors are facing because of the shutdown, we've hashed through some of those. But say we get to tomorrow and we have this omnibus bill, whatever Congress needs to do happens, and that bill moves, and we have funding for all the agencies through 2012. President's expected to sign the defense authorization bill after the Senate votes on it today. So DOD will be fine. Some agencies are already. And so let's just paint a wonderful scenario that by Monday, all the money plans are in place for the rest of this fiscal year. We're still looking at 2013 budgets, potentially, that are going to be just as contentious in Congress. They're going to be smaller at just about every agency. So what are smart companies, do you think, doing right now to prepare for that environment over the next year to 5 years?
One of the things that's changed tremendously is the color of money, whether it's operating funds or capital funds. And basically, all the agencies, when it comes to IT, are losing all their capital funds. Those are the budgets that have been really hacked, where the operating funds, you know, you have to have so much money. Mm-hmm. Just like entitlement, it makes up most of the federal budget is entitlement funds. Most of the IT budget is now operating funds. So smart companies are taking and saying, look, instead of offering our product, come and buy our product, buy our piece of software, buy our hardware, they're saying, let me lease it to you as a service. Let me sell it to you as a subscription service. So there's a huge trend, I believe, I keep seeing it, in subscription services, which mm-hmm. is a totally different way because that's more operating funds each year versus I'm making an asset buy that I have to depreciate over 3 to 5 years. That's a huge trend.
Is that a budget move or is that a long term? Is that a good value for the agency?
I think it's a good value for the agency. The trouble with the capital spend is if you buy something and it doesn't work mm-hmm. or you'd like to trade it out for something else more current, you're stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And I think the agency should be doing more operating funds where they, They buy things on lease, on subscriptions, and they're annual, and they can say, well, I can swap it out or bring somebody else in, and it offers more competition.
I was just going to say, it strikes me that that puts more pressure on the vendor, too, to make sure that you're doing what the agency really wants, because it's a lot easier for them to boot you out and hire somebody else.
Absolutely. This is one of those cases where, you know, federal vendors come to town and they don't understand the federal government marketplace. And I said to them, well, gee, you have to offer it as a service. Oh, no, we only sell it. You know, this is the way we sell it commercially. People buy it and that's that. And we're going to force the government to do that. Well, it's not happening.
Good luck with that approach. Do you see a lot of companies still trying to come into the market? We talked about the possibility of companies exiting the market, but are there still a lot of folks that want to get in?
There are companies. I mean, it's what I've done for years, and companies call all the time and say, how do I get here? What's the next step? What do I need to do? Everybody has the latest widget for the government and mm-hmm. solves all kinds of government problems. Some of my problems have always been with these companies is, have you been successful in the commercial marketplace? Be sure that you're willing to invest 2 to 3 years, which they always say yes, which always turns out to be a lie. But it is a marketplace that takes a long time for the government to understand you. And because of the budget cycles, whether it's whatever the color of money is, it takes about 2 years to really get established mm-hmm. in this marketplace, minimum.
What do the companies who come into the marketplace and do it right do?
They establish, first of all, I give lectures on this and say the worst thing you can do is be the only person representing your company in the federal marketplace. Because mm-hmm. companies expect you to be, first of all, they expect you to be the vice president of sales. They expect you to be a salesman, an expert on FAR, an expert on how the government operates with regard to money, et cetera, et cetera. And but you're only one person. Oh, no, by the way, it's 26 major agencies and the Department of Defense cover them all. It's uh-huh. an impossible job. So the right companies bring a group of people in. They establish, take someone who's had some success, bring it in and say, you know, it's 3 to 5 people and focus. Always the key is focus. Okay, where does our solution best fit into what agencies looking at 53s, looking at 300s, looking at all where the fundies come from, pick the right agencies, take the time, do their research, and then just focus on those agencies. And I always tell to companies coming in, it can't be any more than 4 to 5 agencies because they're all complex. Mm-hmm. And I always say, give me any product I could keep 5 people busy just selling to the Army.
Yeah. That sounds like just a smart way to approach it, where you concentrate on your really good possibilities and grow from there instead of trying to kill everybody at the same time.
It's truly a boil the ocean kind of concept.
Yeah.
You really need to focus. And again, it probably takes, I won't name the company, but a company came to me and said, look, we'd like to, we're a Canadian company. We'd like to be in the federal marketplace, but we don't know how do we be successful. We did a 6-month engagement with them, looked at all the possibilities where their solutions fit in the federal government, came back and said, look, you can't be successful until you buy a company because of the Canadian issue.
Mm-hmm.
They bought a company and been very successful.
The whole idea of trying to break into the market, I mean, companies spend millions of dollars in some cases to try to do it. Of the companies that try to get in, what ratio, what breakdown do you see as far as the ones that are actually able to crack the nut and make a go of it?
You know, it's just, I have found, again, doing it for years, I found it's just like, you know, when capital investment firms make, they expect probably 1 or 2 out of 10 to be mm-hmm. successful. It seems to be the same ratio in the federal
yeah.
government and independent. And it's almost classification. If you take a security product, you take a different product categories, how they fit in.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk some about where you see the spend going over the next couple of years when we come back from the break. Jim Beaupre is my guest. He's a veteran in the government market, and we'll continue our conversation on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom. To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TechSystems.com.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Putting the pain in paintball. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Scarlo with HHS HealthBeat. Ready, aim, paintball. Every day, almost 60 hospital visits nationwide are for air and paintball gun injuries. If you like to gamble, it's not a guessing game who they're for. Statistics show this. Males are 5 times as likely to be admitted for such an injury than females. Ryan Mutter is a senior economist at HHS's Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
60% of visits to the emergency department for air and paintball gun injuries were for children and adolescents 17 and younger. Of that group, of the total, more than 25% were for children aged 10 to 14.
Most common injuries include open wounds to the head, neck, and extremities. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Carlo.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jimbo Prey is my guest on industry chatter today. And I mentioned before the break, Jim, I want to talk about where you see the spend going, but let's continue in the theme that we were on before. We talked about some of the ways that companies coming into the federal market were successful. Talk about some of the things that you've seen companies do that wound up with them being in that 8 or 9 that weren't successful out of 10 rather than the one that made it.
I have virtually scores of examples, but I'll try to give a couple. I'll tell you, a company came to us and said, well, we have a product, and the product was very interesting. Again, they hadn't done their research, and we're fascinated by it. It was a great solution. And I said, yeah, well, we could see where the government would be very interested in that. We got them involved, got them some calls, went and met some people. It turned out on the list of problems for the government, it listed around number 50. So it was never going to bubble to the top,
right.
And we told them to go away. So they hadn't done their research that the government really would be interested, even though it was an obvious solution.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones they really make is the security companies. They think they can come to town and and not go through the certification process.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing security products since 1997, and I finally was convinced last year by the FBI why they need common criteria, why they need NIAPS certifications, and I truly understand it. And companies just don't get it. They think, well, the solution's fine. We'll verify that our code is good.
Mm-hmm.
No, the government wants to know exactly why it's good. So security companies really make that mistake. And then the other ones are that if I could just meet with the CIO. And, of course, we all know the CIOs have no money,
right.
That they'll buy my solution. And you uh-huh. try to tell them it's not like the commercial world. The CIO is a policy person, not a buyer of mm-hmm. technology.
Yeah.
Now, those are some of the kind of mistakes they make.
Now, when you talk about security companies, I've seen it in a couple of different fields, but the cybersecurity field is the one that I see it mostly in. And that is that companies come to the market and assume that if they slap the word cybersecurity on something, that they have a potential product or service that a government customer will want to buy. And we're starting to see it now in other areas where there's potentially a lot of spend. And we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But cloud computing, everybody that has anything that tangentially could possibly be interpreted as a cloud product is ready to sell it to the government. Is that cyclical? Is that something that happens with whatever the hot commodity seems to be at the time?
There's nothing new in the IT marketplace, and I've been there long enough. But sure enough, when we had client server, this is a client server product.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thin client product. We went through all that, and we're seeing that with cloud. Everybody says, they announce it's a cloud product because they've sold it to some TSP, internet provider, and they're going to put it up and call it a cloud product.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make it a cloud product.
Right.
It really doesn't. And we talk about private clouds and public clouds and all that. We really have to define what a cloud product is, because I don't think we've done a good job doing that.
Woody Hall from General Dynamics told me that he thinks that the phrase cloud computing set the process back of selling the product 2 years, because the name is so just kind of doesn't really fit what the product actually is.
Right, right. I mean, I can take it, having a technology background, what would a cloud product really look like?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a shared service. It's ubiquitous. You don't care where it is. You can connect to it from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't what people are selling as cloud products.
Yeah. How do you get around that when you're the customer, get around that and cull through all of these things and figure out what really qualifies, number one, for what your need is to meet your mission, and number two, when you're trying to comply with a cloud-first directive and some of the other things that OMB wants you to be paying attention to, how do you make sure that you're not going to get a quarter of the way or halfway down the garden path and find out you're not where you thought you were going?
And I think that at the end of the day, there will be some procurement, some acquisitions where the contracting officer doesn't understand, will make a mistake along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that'll happen. But what they should be looking for is truly in a real cloud services, best practices, who has used it before, where is it really fit, how do we not only acquire it, but how do we access it, how do we deal with it. Everybody understands web pages in the cloud, email in the cloud. But when it starts getting to applications in the cloud that are beyond the typical ones, that is where the rubber is going to meet the road. And what is a real cloud application
mm-hmm.
is written from the beginning as a cloud application.
Yeah. A lot of people that I've talked to that are looking at email are looking at what GSA did.
Right.
And they had a success story there. I mean, they moved very quickly. Even rank-and-file employees who aren't IT people said this wasn't really a big deal. It just kind of switched over, and I don't notice a whole lot of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The user interface looks a little different, and that's really about it. Functionally, it's pretty much the same. But there are a lot of people in government that are even skeptical about looking at a model like that and saying, well, it worked for them, so I can move confidently and boldly to it myself. What's the role for industry to try to educate government customers that are a little apprehensive even about doing what they're being told to do at the OMB level?
Right. Again, it goes back to demonstrating them what has been done in the commercial world. I mean, the government does respect that. Show me Delta Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
Show me you know, a Wachovia Bank or whatever that's done something that, that can relate to what I'm doing. They're always looking for very large sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing industry can do. But then helping them from a technical standpoint and making them understand and educate government on to what our cloud services, why they're better. It's not just it's cloud because it's cheaper. No, it's cloud because, you know, you don't have to have infrastructure. How are they going to get rid of infrastructure? I think the key right now to you should not, no vendor should walk into the federal government, whatever solution they have, whatever they have, and not say, okay, this is how I'm going to save you budget money and quickly and bring it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't do that, they shouldn't be walking into any government office.
Yeah, it's really fascinating how that conversation has changed because my sense was that even a year ago or 18 months ago, vendors going into agencies were, I think, rightly focusing on, here's how I'm going to help you accomplish the mission as it's set out, however you set it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that conversation seems to me, at least from what I'm hearing, is pretty much gone, and it's all going to what you're talking about.
It's all about budget. And again, it's okay, and I'm afraid that the industry looks at budget and says, oh, our budget's going to be cut. And I tell industry what they should be doing is saying, how does their solution help the budget?
Mm-hmm.
And take a problem that the government is having one way and solve it.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting at the table with Chris Smith from agriculture, and we were sitting at a round table and talking about mobile computing and talking about iPads, and the technology people at the table, iPads are wonderful. They do this and that for us. And I said, stop right away. That isn't what we should be talking about. We should be talking about what does an iPad do for a farmer out in the field that is doing something manually today? And Chris says, that's right, Jim. That's mm-hmm. what we should be talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah, it's interesting because my sense is that the CIOs, those who have control of the purse strings and those who don't, they get that, and their teams get that, and of course the CFOs at the agencies get that, and there are still some people on the industry side that are still coming around to your way of thinking, and I wonder if the ones who take longer to come around will maybe not be around.
You know, we've talked about technology being an enabler. We're really there. I mean, we got to stop talking about the technology and talk about what the technology can enable us to solve.
All right. I promised folks that we were going to talk about your thoughts about the spend in the future. Let's do that. But some nuggets there in what we just talked about I want to get back to later on in the hour. Jim Beaupre is my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Continuing our conversation in a moment.
The Lockheed Martin Navy football update. Steelman inside fake. He keeps. He's buried in the backfield. Matt Warrick shoots through a gap and takes him for a loss. Navy with a fourth down stop. And with that tackle, with 4.5 minutes to go on the 112th Army-Navy game, the midshipmen, in effect, sealed their 10th straight win over the Black Knights by a 27-21 score. Ending 2011 with a 5-7 record, Navy already looks ahead to 0-12. You can follow every offseason development at NavySports.com.
Their mission, defend our country from points all over the globe, 24-7, 365 days a year. They are the men and women of the United States Armed Forces. Our mission? Provide them with advanced systems, hardware, and logistics. Supporting the finest fighting force in the world is all a question of how. And it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We'll be right back.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jim Beaupre on Industry Chatter today. We talked a little bit in the last segment about solutions and what they mean for government customers. And we talked a little bit during the break about the fact that there is still going to be a budget. There's still going to be money, and there's still going to be work that needs to be done. And there will still have to be solutions for the challenges that the agencies deal with. You mentioned one in particular that I think might play into this concept. But tell me where you think the potential exists. If I'm a company and I'm not in a position to do an M&A to try to grow my bottom line, where do I grow in the government market in the next, say, 5 years?
Sure. I mean, DOD is always a place where there's going to be money. Listen to the Army IT yesterday, Susan Lawrence, and there's going to be money there. As they make a transition and consolidation of data centers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about consolidation of data centers, there still has to be some capital spending to get to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be money there. There's going to be money in the whole mobility issue and solving, and there's applications that need to be written for mobility, and there'll be a lot of money there. As mobility, we've all heard Casey Coleman talk about the new GSA building will be for 4,000 people, though the building only holds 2,000 because they plan on using mobility, the other people out. I mean, those are the where money's going to be spent. And then the cybersecurity issue does not go away.
Right.
I mean, there's still money that needs to be spent on cybersecurity. Not as much as in the intelligence community. The intelligence community is being drawn back, I believe. But the civilian agencies, I think there's lots of opportunity to sell cybersecurity products. They're not as far along as Department of Defense and some of the intel agencies.
Does that plateau at some point in time, though, where Mark Forman's been in here any number of times talking about how the bolt-on cybersecurity approach just has to end and cybersecurity needs to be built in. If I'm going out now and procuring some kind of new application, I shouldn't theoretically have to then add something for security onto it. It should be integrated into what I'm buying. So at some point, does that plateau when we've kind of reached a government-wide refresh cycle? And I know it's maybe 5 or 10 years out, but.
No, but I've been in it for 14 years, and the analogy I use is I'm also a bowler. I like to bowl. My wife and I belong to leagues for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bowling ball industry is constantly making better bowling balls that do bigger hooks, that grip the alley better. And the bowling alley manufacturers continue making better oils to defeat those balls. And so you'll have a ball, and next year you need a hotter ball because and it's the same thing. I mean, as the products that stop malware and stop things get better, then the attackers, they get better. And so it's a never-ending cycle. I agree with Mark, but I don't think you can take every contingency and build it into the product.
A little plug that Mark will be here in the 3 o'clock hour tomorrow. The Federal News Countdown, which I want to get you on the countdown sometime after the first of the year, is when two people choose what they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week, rank them in order, and then they count them down in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday. Tomorrow it's a little bit different. Mark Forman and Karen Evans will count down the three most important federal IT stories of the whole year. A lot of brain power in the studio tomorrow in the 3 o'clock hour. One of the things that I mentioned a little bit earlier that I wanted to come back to is the role of education in the sales process. I had an industry person tell me not too long ago. In fact, when I saw you down in Williamsburg, we sell as much now because of the activity of our CTO and our technology people and so on as we do because of the activity of our sales force. What this person was saying was, government customers are more inclined now to buy from people they think are experts rather than people who solve their needs through the qualify, deal with objections, close the sale kind of process that's a more typical historical sales process. Do you think that's going on all across government, or is this just this guy's
vision? No, I see it. I've been seeing it for years. At the end of the day, government buyers, you know, technology people, are risk adverse. Mm-hmm. They don't want to take risk. But they see a new technology and say, this could really solve a problem for us, fix a challenge and all that. But what they're looking for is, that company going to exist? What's the partnership with that company? Mm-hmm. And especially the innovative, smaller technology companies out in Silicon Valley that come here and say, boy, this is a solution that fits well in the government. Are you going to be purchased by somebody? Are you going to last? So the way they overcome those objections, they'll educate them by bringing the CEO, by bringing in the CTO into those agencies and establish that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, Bill Gates and Scott McNeely and all those people have been here in the government to meet with the government people because they know that that's the kind of relationship the government wants.
Mm-hmm.
And those small companies, they say, well, why are we doing that? I've told you, I met Leon Panetta, and I was working for a small company in the early 90s called Santa Cruz Operation,
mm-hmm.
a famous company. They were the Unix guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we need to go see our congressman, who was Leon Panetta.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO says, why do we need to do that? I said, because someday we may need to talk to him, you know, about one of our problems. Let's just go see him. We're the largest technology vendor in his district. Let's go see him. And we did.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, I got to see him again.
It was probably a good idea in hindsight that you did that,
right,
considering how his career track has run.
Yeah, it sure was.
And, of course, not every member of Congress is going to turn out to be the director of OMB or the defense secretary.
Yeah, right.
But just creating that awareness strikes me as a pretty simple, pretty basic marketing tool.
You know, companies, especially technology companies, are always led by one or another factor.
Mm-hmm.
And the factor is, it was a technology person who brought the company up and had great ideas and continues to lead the company and really believes their widget solves the world's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst guy.
Yeah.
And the better guy is the guy who established the company, came up and said, now I need somebody to run this company. I need to step back, be the CTO, and bring in a senior salesperson
mm-hmm.
that has experience in this area. That's the better guy. He understands.
But that's hard when you boil that company up in a pot in your garage, isn't it?
Oh, it really is hard. Some companies just don't let go.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't.
Jim Beaupre is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. Be right back.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a 125-year-old new company built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
I just got 4G LTE from AT&T here in Washington, D.C. And let me tell you, it's crazy fast. Up to 10 times faster than 3G. My roommates can't keep up.
Ooh, Jenny, did you hear?
That Barbara has an extra ticket to the concert? Lisa, that's so 42 seconds ago. I already downloaded it from a link she sent me.
Oh, great.
Lisa will forget about that ticket soon. See, about 52 seconds ago, her boyfriend changed his relationship status to single. She doesn't know that yet, but she will in 3, 2, 1...
AT&T, rethink possible. Introducing AT&T 4G LTE in Washington, D.C. with speeds up to 10 times faster than 3G.
the new HTC Vivid from AT&T. Stay a step ahead with AT&T 4G LTE where available, featuring speeds up to 10 times faster than 3G. Only $199.99. Visit att.com or store for details.
Limited 4G LTE availability in select markets. 4G LTE device and data plan required. Claim compares 4G LTE download speeds to industry average. 3G download speeds. New 2-year wireless service agreement with minimum 15-month monthly data plan required. Other charges and restrictions apply.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW Basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jim Beaupre, and we're talking about what is going on overall. Pretty broad strokes that we're painting today, Jim, on what's going on in the government market for industry. We just have a few minutes left. I really appreciate your time. It's a fun conversation. Overall, what's the deal here in the next couple of years? Are we just in budget crunch mode and we have to figure out that this is the new normal? Is that kind of where we are?
You know, this isn't the first time I've seen this when we all of a sudden have a, I go back to the days when the IT budget was $5 or $6 billion mm-hmm. a year. And so there's always been these budget crunches. And I think we will see some cream rise to the top. Companies will figure it out. We'll know how to educate the marketplace and be able to sell their solutions and look at these are the real problems the government is spending money on, and then we'll bring a solution to help them save money. An IT budget will continue mm-hmm. as long as they can show a return on investment. That's not 5 years. It used to be you'd sell them an IT solution, and ROA, you get all your money back in 5 years. No, no, it's got to be 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had the Congressional Education Working Group, and we met with 21 staffers, and that was their message to us. Congress is afraid of IT. They think it's a lot of money waste, and you have to prove to Congress that you can bring a return on investment also.
But the whole component of life cycle spend seems to be, at the same time you're talking about that, and I agree with you, and I see that too, but the whole concept of life cycle spend seems to be becoming more prominent at the same time, where we're not just thinking about what's going to happen right away. We also do need to think about 5 years out or whatever.
But they're doing it, you know, look at Roger Baker, who was doing it VA mm-hmm. in the six-month increments. I've got Dave Werninger all excited about a book that I read called Little Bets.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came out in April. And it was a great book. I just happened to pick it up, gave it to everybody. And it's all about you take little risk. And I think the government will be moving more and more of that. This administration's been about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the budget crunch will cause them to take smaller bets. And so industry needs to play into that role.
Given where we are, though, with how things are in Congress, is Congress willing to put up with even little bets that maybe aren't successful?
At the end of the day, won't have a choice, because I think IT and technology can save budget money. It's up to industry to prove to Congress and to the administration.